two reasonably funny and very high guys get into mostly episodic hijinks, and the only conflict in sight is whether or not Pee-wee is going to steal the show. It's Cheech and Chong's Nice Dreams, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, I'm Sean Collier. That's Robin Hitchcock. That's Camila Adams. We are three people who stand by our opinion on There's Something About Mary.
As a matter of fact, I'd like to double down on my opinion on There's Something
Trash.
About Mary. That movie is just, ugh. It just doesn't make any sense to me how in the 2024, the year of our Lord and Savior, somebody can watch it and be like, yes, this is funny. And I just don't understand it.
And there was spirited debate on the socials, shall we say. A lot of voices for and against. There were people who said, I love this movie, this is a classic. And there were a number of people who said something to the effect of, I'm so glad to have my hatred toward this movie justified. People who didn't like it at the time and didn't get it, and were glad to hear that we were here going,
Was there any, I've not really been on the socials, is there any, I liked this when I was 15, but now I am grown.
Right, yeah.
Sure, there was some of that. There was some of that. I would only say two things. One is, you know, you can like something for whatever reason. A lot of times that is related to when you saw it and where you saw it and how you saw it in those circumstances, but not even just that. Like, maybe the jokes in this movie, whatever the fuck the jokes were supposed to be, maybe they landed with you. Maybe they worked for you. And if they did, great. Mm-hmm. I'm happy for you. I'm glad you got joy. The fact that I got the opposite of joy does not mean I'm angry at your joy. That's fine.
Liking I'm sometimes angry at other people's joy.
I try not to be. But
I also try not to be, but sometimes.
Liking a thing does not automatically mean it's good. The fact that you like a thing does not mean it's a good... I like Taco Bell. I'm coming from Taco Bell right now.
Do you have a Baja Blast?
I didn't. I should have.
What's the point?
That doesn't mean it's good. It's just something I like. Right. You can like a movie that isn't good. I like so many movies that aren't good.
Same.
You don't need to be like, well, I like this, so I have to defend it. No.
No, you don't.
And particularly
if you didn't have anything to do with actually making said media and you're not getting paid for it.
I would just go on to say that even if you're like, what? I disagree so much. I would point out Robin's very cogent argument about the gross ableism in There's Something About Mary and how it has been used to do actual harm in the world. And I would point out the litany of like prison rape jokes and gay sex jokes in this movie and just suggest,
and the fundamental thesis that loving a woman means you must abuse her.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
And I would just say that maybe if you heard all of those arguments, which I thought we made fairly eloquently last week, you would go, I'm going to like this without waving a giant flag that says I like it, which is fine. Go ahead and like it. But this movie, really? Are you sure?
I think people have different ability to say, well, it was the time, right? Mm-hmm. And like, I don't really have that ability. And sometimes I wish I did more. Yeah.
I don't like that argument, that quote unquote argument.
Yeah.
I can get behind, I liked it at that time.
Yeah.
I did not know better at that time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I see it now. I know better. I have grown. Now I do not enjoy this type of behavior, this type of banter.
Yeah.
Like that's a little different to me than being like, oh, it was of the time and just excusing it. It's like, you know, you're not really learning anything.
Yeah. It's also always easier to go, it was of the time, when you are not of the group affected by that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Slavery was also of the time.
It is literally what we were doing back then. Or at the very least, you can acknowledge that on the one hand, and even if you're still gonna like it, again, you can like it quietly. We are all free to like things without letting everyone know.
I'm not in your house.
Sure. Just go, you do you. It's easy for you to say you have the platform. I do, and I enjoy it. You know what was really of the time is Cheech and Chong's nice dream.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Was it though? This is 1981. Like, Reagan is president. This is of a slightly earlier time.
It was of its time and several other times. Okay. And in some ways, it was ahead of its time. And in some ways, it was so far behind its time. And it's, I don't know. I don't know where this is going to go. Other than... Pretty sure it's getting a higher score than There's Something About Mary. But other than that, I don't know where this is going to go. I think this is the first Cheech and Chong movie I've actually watched.
I think I have not seen a full Cheech and Chong movie before. I know that I have a memory of watching probably Up in Smoke. That's like their most popular one.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
With my dad and him like explaining that stoner comedy is a whole genre.
Yeah.
Which like I was too little to understand. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that we actually watched the whole movie.
I don't know. We may be the first people ever. I mean, if you count like dutiful attention, I don't know if it's ever. I mean, they made a lot of money. I'm joking, and I think there's more to this comedically than meets the eye in some ways, but like I don't feel like these are movies to sit down and quietly watch.
No, this is absolutely meant to be in the background.
Yeah.
As you're smoking.
Yes. Or like, I was thinking a lot about people seeing this in the theater. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, those poor bastards, they couldn't smoke. And then I remembered drive-ins.
Right. Also.
Drive-ins, the alley. There were options.
I bet. Yeah. That's the thing is like, because I was thinking about it. Like nowadays, when you want to see a movie high, you take an edible.
Right.
Right. And then you're high for that whole goddamn movie. And it's great. If you're trying to smoke your way through a movie, a lot more effort. Ask me how I know.
Do we need to establish that baseline? That I don't know if we need to be on the record or not.
I will say that I watched Cheech and Chong, this movie, the only way to watch a Cheech and Chong movie, and that is high definition on YouTube.
I watched this as the director intended.
No, I mean, I dabbled here, you know, back in the day. But like, I think I said before, it's just, you know, just makes me sleepy. And I've always, and I feel like every dude I've ever been with has always been a pothead.
I had a good run, you know, in my younger days. And then something clicked, something broke, something snapped. And now I just get panic attacks.
Yeah. They're terrible.
Yeah.
I will say that I did go to, I've never gone to the movie theater, I don't think. Hi. But on weed. But for whatever reason, I believe I had took a tab of acid and went and saw the Johnny Depp version of Hunter S. Thompson's movie.
Oh, what a choice.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. Oh boy, that was not a good choice.
I mean, I do see why you did that. It's the same as getting high to watch a Cheech and Chong movie.
I guess, but I don't think I fully understood.
Okay,
what I was going to.
You went to Bat Country. The only movie I'm sure I went to high was the animated film Over the Hedge. And that just left me convinced that it's about drugs. But wait a minute. There's a big bear played by Michael Madsen that collects snacks. And the Bruce Willis squirrel steals all his snacks. And then they have to go and get more snacks. I'm like, come on. The bear's the dealer. He went through the stash. Now he's sending them to... Anyway.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me.
Not much these days. Not at all these days. It's just, there's no point. Yeah. I know I'm not going to have a good time, so I don't bother.
But, I've never watched a full Cheech and Chong movie on purpose.
Yeah.
But this did, I finally understood a reference from, this movie put me back in my Cypress Hill era.
Oh, amazing.
I understood a reference finally from one of my favorite Cypress Hill songs. Stoned is the Way of the Walk from like 1991. Mm-hmm. It's like, hits from the bong make me feel like Cheech kicking at my chong, which I understood that.
Right. Yeah, we got that.
But this is just like Cheech and Chong fronting with ice cream, Cypress Hill is here to give you a nice dream.
Just like Cheech and Chong fronting with ice cream, Cypress Hill is here to give you a nice dream.
Awesome!
Before I even watched it, and I'm thinking, like, yeah, this is what we're watching Cheech and Chong's neck. And then I'm just like, oh, just one of those revelations.
I love that.
My initial reaction to this, and the Faxi segment will back this up a little bit more, and then we'll get to the segments. But I'm like, while there are problems here, and while, you know, much of this is inconsequential at best, this is observably comedy, like crafted comedy of a sort is happening here in a way that not just last week's movie, but lots of failed comedies don't have. Right. Like this exists in the world of comedy.
I think that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a lot of, I mean, again, because you're not supposed to watch this, just like and pay attention to it. So it was a lot of, I didn't find a lot of it funny, but I wasn't offended by most of it. It was just, it just didn't land for me. But there were moments where I did chuckle and laugh a little bit out loud.
Right.
Some of the bits went on too long.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as we were talking before, some things are better off as shorts. Like this would have been.
That was off mic, but yes.
Yes.
I had two kinds of laughs for this movie, and one was ha, right. And one was ha. And then add that chuckle part for the next 4 minutes.
I think the only part that gave me that was the when they did coke at the restaurant.
Okay.
And Cheech's his physical comedy to that.
Yes.
Like that shit was funny.
Are we ready for our plot recap?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So, as I said, I watched this as the director intended.
Uh-huh.
Folks, I have a medical card. I have chronic pain.
Right.
I might be on the job market again soon. Potential employers, I am willing to go straight for your drug test.
It's medical.
Seriously, you got a card.
But in the meantime, what I did was, after I watched this movie, I made a voice recording of Hi Robin.
Oh my.
Summarizing the plot of it. I am going to read the transcript of that. All right. So, eyes on the clock. I'm again, Hi Robin, time dilation.
Right.
We don't know. All right.
Go.
Okay. So like Cheech and Chong are two guys and they have an ice cream truck. They're like selling weed out of it. And there's a bunch of hot ladies who are around them all times. Also, there's Pee Wee Herman who steals their money in some way. Oh, and there's a cop. Okay. This is important. The weed that they have for some reasons that I can't remember, or maybe they're never explained. Who knows? Okay. Anyway, the weed that they have turns you into a lizard, like for real, an actual lizard with a tail and green and your tongue jumps out like for bees. Wait, no, not bees. You know what lizards are. Okay. So humans and pigeons become lizards if they smoke the ice cream weed. There's a girl and they have a threesome, which is like, yes. And then wait, okay. They go to a mental institution and there's Pee Wee Herman again. And then they strip and they have surprisingly nice bodies. Wait, I also forgot Timothy Leary is in it as himself. Cheech and Chong also do acid. Also, they did cocaine with Pee Wee. Gateway drugs.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
That makes more sense than if you attempted to actually explain what was happening.
Yes. Absolutely.
That is in the spirit of the thing. And it was mostly improvised. They said that they had a 3.5 page script for this.
Thank you. That's what I assumed. I was right. Like, this is just, these guys are just in front of the camera and let the cameras run and let's do it.
They said that they extensively storyboard because they want the crew and the production to know what to shoot. Mm. But in terms of what's going to happen, they're just, and they would film all day. Like they would film forever.
Wow.
And one of the things the best stuff.
I loved is that they clearly had no concern for costume continuity. And it was just like, they each have three shirts and whatever they filmed on the day that he wore his normal shirt. That's those scenes. He's got that shirt on.
Yeah.
Because really, who's counting?
It was,
me.
Also, there was one point where I think he showed up and his white jumpsuit was like ripped and dirty, and I didn't understand why, because in the scene prior to that, it wasn't.
Yep.
Scene missing from film. This was released June the 5th, 1981, the 13th number one movie in America. $8.1 million, which is pretty good. Plenty of winners around that time did not make $8 million in their weekend. Just a 1 week number one movie in America, however, because the very next week, a film called Raiders of the Lost Ark came out.
A little film.
Prior episode subject.
Shout out to Jim Kiley.
And somewhat more successful, but this was a very successful movie. It made about $37 million. It's 13th overall for 1981. That's above American Werewolf in London. That's above History of the World Part 1. Wow. That's above our first episode subject, Sharky's Machine. This did very, very well. Not quite as well as the first two. This is the third Cheech and Chong movie. Up in Smoke was in 78. Cheech and Chong's next movie was in 1980. those two did better, not wildly, like in the 40s, but even bigger hits. The movies after this got diminishing returns in a hurry. Things Are Tough All Over was in 1982. Still Smoking was in 83. Cheech and Chong in The Corsican Brothers in 1984. And a reunion, Cheech and Chong's animated movie in 2013. None of those did very, very well. This was the last true hit. The history of these guys. They started as an improv troupe.
How did they meet each other?
Started as an improv troupe?
Chong's family had a burlesque / comedy space.
Amazing.
Hippie burlesque.
Hippie burlesque.
Incredible.
In Vancouver. And Cheech showed up in 1968.
Is he also Canadian?
No.
Okay.
He was just there, man.
All right.
He showed up in 1968, wanted to start an improv troupe. They did. Tommy Chong was also trying to do more music. But one day the two of them went out there together to kick off the show and riffed, and that ended up being the whole show. They never left the stage, just the two of them, and decided, aha, we work as a duo.
Rumor is that Cheech moved to Canada to avoid the draft.
Yes.
Oh, smart.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Good thing to do. They quickly
also thank you, Jimmy Carter, for pardoning him.
Right.
They quickly began putting out comedy albums, beginning with a self-titled album in 1971. That was in the top 30 on Billboard. Grammy nominated for Best Comedy Album. Lost to Lily Tomlin. Fair.
All right.
Yeah. More albums followed. The movies a few years after that. Headlining tours. There's that bit about Bruce Springsteen in this movie. Bruce Springsteen was opening for Cheech and Chong after Greetings from Asbury Park. Like when they were just newly the E Street Band, they were the opening band for Cheech and Chong.
Well, I now know what I'm going to do if I get access to a time machine.
Yes.
Go see that show.
I want to see that show.
Most of the rest of this is very trivia, but there's just so much trivia about these two and some this movie specifically. Briefly, Pee-wee Herman was already a character.
Okay.
Not Paul Rubens, but Pee-wee existed. Pee-wee is in Cheech and Chong's next movie.
Oh, interesting.
He was just hanging out with them a lot. This was, you know, like, I guess I won't be Pee-wee for this one. Huh. Obviously, it was not like the children's show version.
Departure, though. It's not.
Yeah. No, it's not too different.
Yes,
but it is.
It's like Pee-wee Herman gone dark.
Yeah, right.
Right? Like, it's
darker.
Like, yes.
Yeah, Pee-wee's Night Off.
The mirror universe Pee-wee.
That was my biggest laugh in the whole thing, which people don't. I had to look up the quote to make sure I write, because I was like, did I even hear that? When he leans over and is like, hear about those girls? They're dipping in wax down at the wax museum. That's when I cackled, just for the intense. Anyway, one of his last non-Pee-wee roles for a while. Most of the 80s, he was Pee-wee. Here, different. Evelyn Guerrero, who plays the girl they have a threesome with.
Yes.
Carol Lindsay. What the hell was the character's name?
I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
Donna?
Anna?
Donna? Donna seems right. That's Evelyn Guerrero. She had an okay career. That character in three Cheech and Chong movies. And that's her best known thing. But she was the first Latina to pose in Playboy.
Good for her.
But here's the thing I want to stress. She is also the widow of Pat Morita.
Stop it.
What?
This is
Yuri Morita?
Mrs. Miyagi. This is
Academy Award nominee, Pat Morita?
Shut your front face. Stop it. Oh my God.
So wait, at this point, she was his ex-wife?
No, she was with him till death. I think they were not yet married.
Okay.
And I can't even truly get the answer on that. They may have been married already. It's very difficult to pin down because she's one of those people who, like, her age truly is not a matter of public record. Like, no one knows how old she is. Good for her.
Yes.
I think she's a little older than you think she is. And Pat Morita.
Usually that's how they mess it. Yeah.
And Pat Morita is definitely younger than you think. This is how I learned that Pat Morita was like 51 in The Karate Kid.
But when you go back and watch The Karate Kid, he looks 50.
Yeah.
Right? It's just when you're a kid, he seems so old.
Like 70s, yes. 80s.
Right. But so there's certainly an age gap between them. But yes, somewhere around here, she married Pat Morita.
I got to say, out of all the shit you dropped on us during this Faxy segment, this is the one.
Yes.
This is the bona fide winner.
And that's even more exciting than finding out that Ray Don Chong is Tommy Chong's daughter.
Yeah,
quite frankly. I'm very excited about.
Oh, I'm sorry. The marriage is on record. They did get married later. They married in 1994.
Oh, so she didn't go to the Oscars with
him. She did not go to the Oscars with him.
Shame.
His third wife, actually, but was with him until his death in 2005.
Wonderful.
Speaking of people who are married to people, the hot bodybuilder was Tommy Chong's wife.
Colin loves that shit.
Shelby Chong.
The boobs.
Okay.
Yep.
Chong's wife.
Yes. Okay. Yes. That is not Ray Don's mother.
Okay. I got it.
Several wives.
I need to say that I appreciated that in that scene where the camera's really focused on her boobs, mm-hmm. they have a nice looking guy in short shorts with thick thighs in the background.
If you care, look beyond the boobs. And that's there is something for you,
something too. For everyone.
Yeah.
Pat Morita and I had to lead with, but three equally unbelievable facts. Stripes was considered as a Cheech and Chong vehicle. It was developed as a Cheech and Chong vehicle.
Were they in it?
No. Ivan Reitman wrote Stripes for Cheech and Chong. Oh. They wanted complete control over the script or lack thereof, and he just quickly rewrote it for Bill Murray and Harold Ramis instead.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Huh. Love that. Second thing I love, there was a serious pitch underway for Cheech and Chong meet Jason Voorhees.
No, my God.
That would have been modeled after Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. And, I'm not mad at that.
I'm not, yeah.
I'm like, if ever you could pitch a movie that Sean wants to use a genie wish on.
Maybe people know this, and I'm the one that doesn't notice. Tommy Chong went to jail for a while.
For drugs?
Yes.
Or tax evasion.
For paraphernalia.
Yeah, he got raided. Like, they were supposed to have, like, a reunion or something.
Yeah, they were. I mean, they've had a million reunions and a million breakups, but, like, they were on their way and developing another movie in the early 2000s. He had, like, a glass business and something interstate commerce, you know, whatever. And it did really seem like he went to jail as a celebrity scapegoat, like everyone else in the trial got probation and whatever. And he went to jail for, I think, 9 months or something.
Yikes.
At which time, his cellmate was Jordan Belfort, the Wolf of Wall Street.
Sean, you're making this up.
And
how come that's not in the movie?
And Tommy Chong convinced Jordan Belfort to write the book that became The Wolf of Wall Street. They're sitting there. He's like, you should write your memoirs.
Okay.
Man.
So also I found out that Ray Don Chong discovered Chris Pratt. Yeah, so now on my time machine mission, I might be taken out of family.
Right. Stop her from that?
Yes. Yikes. Also, I can't believe The Wolf of Wall Street's like, what, 3 hours of nonsense and they couldn't work that in somewhere?
Right. Like, you told me all this other bullshit.
Well, he doesn't go to jail in the movie. And that's later. It's kind of the end.
You know, I would like to give, I feel like not a lot of people realize the genius that is Cheech and Chong.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just think it's downplayed a lot, or no one really wants to look past it because, like, I mean, shit, like, Chong? Really? You're just like, yeah, you should write a book. And then this guy's like, okay, fuck it. Yeah, I'll do that. Mm-hmm. And just like everything around, just the fact that they had creative control, every step of their career seems very well managed and thought out.
Did they direct, or did Tommy Chong direct the previous ones?
Yeah, he directed 4 of them, I think.
Okay. Because that's awesome.
Yeah. And this is not poorly directed.
No.
There's way more helicopter shots than I anticipated.
I put in my notes, they paid for a helicopter and they were like, we are getting our money's worth.
6 hours later, we get some people to get their boobs out and circle around them in the helicopter. Yes. That's okay, do that.
Other, like, as a comedy person, there is a thing that happens in comedy where people are like, I'm writing my own script or whatever. I am going to put beautiful women in my vicinity for whatever reason I can think of. And I respect that.
Yeah. Because I can't say that I would be any less gross about it if I were
right, as long as they were respectful on set, right? Like, as long as they treated them well and everything, I'm like, yes, use your power for good.
People knew what they were signing up for, signed up.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, this point, it wasn't anything new. Like, Cheech and Chong, who are these guys? No, you guys knew.
Yeah.
You guys
knew. You're familiar with the general. Guys, do we like this movie?
I did like it.
I kind of like the movie.
Yeah. I kind of like it.
Like, it's not like, I'm not like, go watch this movie.
No, but I'm also like, I wouldn't be, again, like if I were, I wouldn't be mad if it was on and I walked into a room.
Yes.
And I could actually, I feel like I could hang out with Tommy Chong.
Mm-hmm.
Even Cheech isn't that annoying.
He's going to talk a little more than you want, but
Cheap, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Which is why I prefer Chong.
There are, for the fact that so much of this is improvised and they have a 3.5-page script, there are a few, like, golden bits. Mm-hmm. Like, when she said, meet Jerry Garcia, I lost my mind. Like, the amount of setup to that and then perfect payoff. Right.
Yes.
Yeah, that was pretty brilliant.
My favorite bit in the whole movie is pretending that their tarp over their grow pit is a swimming pool to fool the cops.
That's what they
were
doing.
Cheech doing the backstroke in the hole in their tarp.
Oh my God, it did not click for me.
Well, I was in the right frame of mind, so it clicked for me.
And I'm pretty sure that's a Buster Keaton homage. Like, one Buster Keaton movie where they're like, go to the city pool, and he's like on the part, you know, where there's like a part that you walk on, but it's also in the water, and he's just belly stroking on that thing. And a minute later, they did a silent bit where they were carrying the stuff, and it went all fast, and he falls down the hill. I'm like, is this preserving the silent comedy traditions?
It might be.
It is.
I love that bit of him falling down the hill. And then the whole, right there when they're in the under the tarp and they're just now starting, like they're both kind of bobbing together up in unison, up and down. I thought that was adorable and very funny.
The thing that really makes these people work is that they have good chemistry,
right?
Yeah.
And they get each other, which is why they like are able to improvise together,
right?
Mm-hmm. And they like each other, right? Like most of the time, as is common in artistic partnerships,
right. Yes.
But like, there's a lot of times when, like, as an improviser, there are sets you see where you're like, I had fun because I could tell they were all having fun.
Yeah.
There's also, I've seen sets where I'm like, why are they acting like they're having such a good time? This is boring as hell.
Yeah.
This fell into the former category for me. Mm. I was like, I'm enjoying this because they're enjoying
this.
They're
having a hoot.
And yes.
I could also get behind, was it Chong's idea of the old folks stoner retirement home?
Honestly, that has to exist.
Right?
That makes must exist.
So much sense.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That has to exist.
I was worried early on when they did the Save the Whale song and I laughed. I was like, is this going to be the highlight of the movie? It wasn't.
No.
That was a good part.
But save the whales, kill the seals.
Well, save all the whales. But shoot the seals.
It works. That works.
And having I love the credits version of that song. It's like a bop.
Having a framed wanted poster of your boyfriend works. Like,
oh my God, yeah.
There's just bits on bits in this, and they generally, there are some things that have not aged well.
There is a point in this movie where Cheech polls the audience on whether or not he should rape his girlfriend because she passes out. And he's like, what? He like addresses the camera. That's fair. He addresses the camera and he's like, what am I going to do? She passed out. And then he like asks the audience, he's like,
fourth wall.
He's like, raise your hand if you think I should just go for it. And then raise your hand if I don't. And the thing that I hated about that is knowing what the audience did.
Yeah.
Because like, I think I've talked here before. Like I remember so clearly seeing the movie the Othello in high school movie. Mm-hmm. And during the rape scene, people were like hooting and hollering.
Oh God.
And I was like, get me the fuck out of this room.
Oh,
right. So like, yeah, I didn't like thinking about that. It sucked. That part of the movie really sucked.
That brought it down. That's going to knock a few points off the score.
Yeah.
Especially because they go to a lot of that is going to pains to try to wave it away. Like a minute later,
they
like deliberately show her awake during the act. And that speech is kind of like, what's like, well, then you could have just not done that bit.
Exactly.
Why didn't you just, you know,
right.
And there are other moments that I'm like, including the various aspects of the mental asylum sequence.
Oh yeah. Yes. Yes. Oh, there's multiple slurs in the cast list. Like there's problems in this film, right? I don't want to start this episode by being like, how dare you still like There's Something About Mary,
right.
And then be like, right. Cheech and Chong have done no wrong.
Right.
Because
but
they have.
Again, we're saying, yeah, that takes away from it.
Yeah.
But we can balance those things and come to a conclusion for ourselves later on. Also, this one's actually funny.
Yes, right.
That's the key difference. It is a key difference. I don't like, there are some things that are unforgivable, even if it's perfectly crafted comedically. And that doesn't, nor are these things forgivable, to use the word I just used. But it is a big difference when it's like, that movie was funny, I do have to acknowledge these problems, as opposed to, that movie was not funny. Right. And I have all of these problems. Yeah.
Right. And also, yeah, I think that there's the balance of problems, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, if we've got a three or four things that it's like, versus mm-hmm. like a full-on set of yikes, 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 yeah, for me. I mean, note that when I finished the movie and was like, time to record my recap, I didn't think about that at all, right? Because I was like, I'm just going to pretend this isn't part of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cheech has an all-time great I am choking face. It is perfect.
I think I want to give Cheech Marin a shout out for being a really versatile oh, yeah, actor. And mm-hmm. just the fact that, you know, after a while, I forgot that he was of Cheech and Chong. You know, you mm-hmm. see him in like, you know, fucking like Tarantino movie that he plays like eight different roles. And like Dusk Before Dawn, uh-huh. Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh, yes.
And mm-hmm. then there's also, like, I guess he was on Nash Bridges or something?
Yes.
Which that's you what were I saying meant. That was, like, a show you watched as a kid?
Yeah, that was on in, like, 96, 97, and oddly, that landed in my family. So that was my introduction. I mean, I had already
Don
seen
Johnson,
Line.
That's Don Johnson, right?
Yeah.
I always confuse it with Walker, Texas Ranger.
No. Isn't it the same?
No, because Walker, Texas Ranger is very Texas. It's very yeehaw. Bridges was in San Francisco,
and also
so
it's
like an urban.
And it's, like, a comedy.
It's an action comedy.
Like Justified? Funny.
No, it's like a sillier CSI or you know, well, not silly. It's just an action. It's
lighter.
An urban action comedy.
Because you brought up CSI, I have to say that I was listening to DVE driving mm-hmm. over here, and the last words I heard through the radio were Timothy Leary in The Who's The Seeker.
Weird.
Hmm. And I was like, ignition off.
I don't know that he
Dr. Timothy Leary.
I don't know that he really added anything here, but did he have to?
I
was
think
just
that
showing up.
I
he
think
was,
just seeing his name in the opening credits was enough.
I also really appreciated the doctor piece of it. Like, because mm-hmm. I mean, he is, right?
Yeah.
Was he a PhD or a medical doctor? I think a PhD.
I think it's PhD.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Regardless, that sequence was alarming. But
it was Michael Winslow. Did you notice?
No, absolutely not.
Doing the Jimi Hendrix and doing all the guitar noises with his voice was Michael Winslow from Police Academy.
Holy cow. I definitely would not have made that connection, but that's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was I going to say about Timothy Leary? Oh, it's just there for the like the audience, right?
Right.
It's like how Bruce Springsteen has a cameo in High Fidelity, right? It's like, hey, it's that guy that we all like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say that if you're going to put some weed turns people into lizards into your movie, it feels like we should spend a bit more time on that. It did feel like okay, is that the point of the movie?
It's certainly
not.
It's just happening.
It's just kind of there, because honestly, out of everything that happens in this movie, that lizard thing is probably the last thing that I think about.
Yes.
That I almost forgot about it, actually, until you mentioned it. And also odd Stacey Keach in it.
Stacey Keach,
he's in a few of these.
He's,
yeah.
I don't know why I like Stacey Keach so much. He is one of those people who, like, his face looks like it's been chipped out of concrete.
Mm-hmm. It does. It looks like a Dick Tracy character.
Yes, and like he seems like he would hurt you. Like he does, but there is something about him that I always enjoy.
So listen, the whole Chong, according to Chong's legal problems. 2003, Chong became caught up in two American investigations, codenamed Operation Pipe Dreams and Operation Headhunter, which tried to trace drug traffic and users through businesses selling drug
and
paraphernalia.
Pipe Dreams, they raided Taylor Ropa in Oakland.
That's what I was getting to. That's what I was getting to. Selling drug paraphernalia, mostly bongs, Operation Pipe Dreams was run from Pittsburgh. Which, what?
Yeah, that was when I was in college at Pitt.
I bought a pair of light blue sunglasses there when I was 17.
I used to really
I had
like
a hair scarf.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a cool place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And also, like, it's so goofy because now you can buy bongs at fucking grocery stores, right? Or not grocery stores,
like
convenience gas stations.
Stores.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, like,
there's like a fucking, like, head shop or whatever. It's just like there's like two in Squirrel Hill, like, of all places, like, right next to Rita's.
I mean, but here's the thing, like, ultimately, I got like slightly, I was high. I got like slightly emotional about like the counterculture won.
I kind of,
I mean, it's not accurate. Like the whole reason that weed has become largely legal and largely normalized is in response to the opioid crisis, right? Mm. Like the situation we are in now where normie squares Papa Gummy is because millions of people died because of the Sacklers. Like that's just true and it's harsh.
And it's not even as normalized here. Is that like, have you ever gone to Michigan? Like as soon as you cross the border into Michigan, there's billboards that are like weed here. There's an actual
hash fest in Ann Arbor I've been to.
There's no pretense of medical or you have to this or you have to that or decriminalized. It's like, we smoke weed all the time. We're Americans. Yeah. It's like Amsterdam. And that's good, except...
Weed's not legal in Amsterdam.
What?
Yeah.
What?
It's just accepted.
We're just looking the other way?
Yeah.
That was...
I'm pretty sure that's true.
Not to give away too much of my personal history, but that was the end for me. That was the end.
You had your panic attack where you were like, this is the last one?
No, I've
there's too many canals.
There are several times since then that I've been like, I'm probably fine now. Not fine. But... I had some bad experiences overseas, and then a couple of months later went to Amsterdam, and everyone is just high for 4 consecutive days, and I never had fun once. I was never enjoying myself because it's so strong, and it's so intense, and you're in an unfamiliar place, and it's kind of rainy and cold, and so it's just like your head not working right and wandering around.
That's awful.
And after that, I'm like, maybe this is dumb.
Maybe this is not for me.
Yeah, maybe I'm the normie square. What's the point? I'll tell you one thing about the trailer.
Columbia Pictures presents Cheech and Chong, together again in Nice Dreams, the story of two enterprising young men who make an amazing amount of money selling ice cream.
We got $17 million, man.
No.
And who are into neighborly visits.
Oh, animal. Oh, when did you get out?
Come on, open up, I'll break the door down.
Fine dining.
Oh, lobster. How about squid? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And anything else they can get their hands on.
Doctor?
Yeah?
I have this terrible problem. Oh, you're probably much too busy, man, to listen to my problem.
Oh, no. I'd love to look at your problem.
Cheech and Chong's Nice Dreams. Rated R.
Because the world has changed so much, I'm watching this trailer and I'm like, this must have been weird to see on television in 1981.
Yeah, it's really hard to, I don't, this, you know, it's before I was alive.
Yeah.
And I grew up in Dare world, right?
So oh, like, I have the lion.
Yeah.
I won the lion.
I don't know what the lion is.
If you write the best Dare essay, you get the lion.
Oh, well, is it a...
like a stuffed animal.
Oh
like
my gosh.
Oh yeah.
No, I didn't do that. Mm-hmm. But drug abuse resistance education did not exist in 1981.
No.
And so I do think that when we were growing up, you and I, Sean, that weed was more transgressive than it was in 81.
Oh.
But I don't know. I wasn't around. Older listeners.
You think what?
I think that weed was more transgressive in the 90s than in the early 80s.
Than in the 70s and 80s. Yeah. I mean, the war on drugs had not started
exactly.
Yet. Yeah, that's true.
I don't know, man.
tell us what was going on with weed when you were 6.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I just was talking about what's going on with weed when I was 6.
Well, that's true. That's true.
There are things I cannot get into. Oh,
well, I'll instead tell you that the letterboxed was movies where a character reacts badly to the appearance of an iguana or some iguanas. Just one of those things that proves there is a list for everything.
Goodness
on
gracious.
Letterboxd. I don't know. Someone was tracking it.
What else is on that list?
Yeah.
It had Bride of Reanimator. I don't remember. It had Holes, the YA movie.
I'm too old for Holes.
It had Master and Commander. I don't think I ever saw Master and Commander.
They end up on the Galapagos Islands.
Okay. Yeah. Terminator. I don't remember.
Know. Yeah.
And one we've done, 22 Jump Street. Where was there an iguana in 22 Jump Street?
Yeah. Who remembers?
Still, it's a list.
Oh, what I wanted to say about the trailer... Were all of those scenes actually in the movie? Because again, it's like this movie is vibes based, you know, like, but I definitely when watching the trailer this morning was like, was that? Did did that?
Probably not. I mean, you said that they just shot for like hours on it.
Somewhere there's a DVD of this that has one disc of movie and three discs of deleted scenes. And here's all the rest. They said that the studios would be mad at them for wasting film because at the time that was expensive.
Speaking of age, I was out with a bunch of 25-year-olds yesterday, and I was like,
"You gotta quit doing that. That really throws off your perspective on things." I do it too, and I'm like, "So you don't know about Blockbuster Video as a concept?"
I like it. I had older friends growing up, in my 20s.
Sure.
It made me a better person. Mm-hmm. I'm paying it forward. Great. Also, these people are very cool.
Good.
And I was like, "So are any of you aware of Cheech and Chong?" And they were all like,
"The hyena?
They're too young for that."
Oh God!
Ugh. Right? No,
movie's 30 years old. Yes. Keep in mind.
Oh God!
They were like, "Stoners? They did stoner movies, but like, couldn't pick them out of a lineup." And the person there who is the most of an herbal enthusiast, to borrow an expression from my friend, she was like, "Never heard of them." Right?
What?
I mean, she immigrated to the U.S., I think, within the last 5 or 6 years. So that might be part of it. But still.
That's just wild to me. Sometimes things that are just everyday and commonplace for me. Yes. And then to like come across somebody who has no idea what the fuck I'm talking about. Like, it's so random. And it's just it's hard to remember that I am the star of my own show.
Yes.
And nobody else knows exactly what's, not everybody has the same experiences.
Was it WrestleCon over the weekend? And I don't know if it's deliberate or not, but there's like a lot of the real old dudes were on one floor and a lot of the like current to recent past dudes were on a different floor, and just seeing the age shift, like, oh, here's everybody. Here's people in their 20s, people in their 30s. Go down a floor. Everyone here has gray hair. You're just that man I know from culture 30 years ago. Damn it. I'm old. Okay. Wow. Yeah.
Time comes for us all.
Mm-hmm. 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 I was at one of the wrestling shows I was with my buddy Julian, and he pointed at a wrestler and said, "The first time we went to one of these shows together, she wasn't alive."
Yeah.
Wow.
I hate it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know what score to give this movie. I never wrote one down. I hadn't even like given it a star on Letterboxd. It's a mess, but it just works for me. I think
Robin
like
has it right. It's vibes.
I think like,
and also I would like to visit Vatoland. You got the place where you guys put we have a wall for graffiti.
Talks about the guest gangs, different guest gangs every night. 64. Oh, Camila.
32.
Wait a minute. You've been as positive as I did, and you have half of your score's half of mine.
I know. I don't know. That's the way that came up.
Okay, it's fine.
I mean, it's not a bad 30. It's not a negative 32.
32, friends. Complimentary. I'm going to go 51. I refuse to call this bad, but I will go no better.
Averages out to a 49, which, again,
the year that my dad, who was a stoner in college, was born.
And this is a deep Cheech and Chong sequel. The fact that it's floating around the middle is probably just about right.
Yes.
To the bingo card.
I have to get mine out. Anything.
Well, I won't get mine out if there's nothing.
Unless one of you were born in 81.
Nope.
Nothing.
And we will skirt right past that. It's time for You Can Handle the Truth. I'm going to give it to Camila first in case she wants to take a nice walk while Robin and I get into Civil War later.
Civil War? What are you talking? What? Okay.
That's just the name of the
film. Hold on to your butts.
Okay. Here we go.
Go ahead. I see you waded into the spooky pool.
A little bit, yeah.
You went to the pool that makes you spooky.
I like how Sean always pulls up our Letterboxd alongside of us to make sure that we're not leaving out something he wants to talk about.
Well, yeah. Right.
No, I'm interested. Thank you. That's good podcast hosting. Okay.
So for one, for whatever reason, my daughter came home and was immediately wanting to watch Tangled a couple weeks ago. Around Easter break time. And so I have now seen Tangled 723 times. Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty
good. But it's
good.
A good movie. Mm-hmm. And I'm here for it. So I would like to, you know, just put that out there. If that's one of the Disney princesses you aren't familiar with, go watch Tangled.
I've never seen that one.
I have things to say about Tangled. If you could, can I hop in here? One thing I want to say is Mandy Moore turned 40 yesterday, the same day as my friend Lexi Moore, now Lexi Crisp. So happy birthday to both of you. And also, I think that movie is like one of the best depictions of an emotionally abusive relationship between a mother and a daughter that I've ever seen.
I'm just going to leave it at, it was slightly triggering, but Max is probably my favorite character, the horse. Cracks me up every time, but yes, Tangled is much better than I imagined that it would be.
Disney's really good with horses, and the key is make them dogs.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you're so right.
Or reindeer in the case of Frozen. You just have them act like dogs, and it's the cutest thing in the world.
Also, you know what's such a good thing to do when you're high? Watch Disney movies.
Again, Over the Hedge. Not a Disney movie.
But yeah.
Same principle.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, Spooky Pool. I watched Night Swim. It was dumb.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't even pull it up. Like, what I watched.
Going in, it's like, is the whole concept just that the pool is spooky?
Right.
Yes.
So,
it's not enough.
So maybe we just fill it. Just don't go in the pool. I don't understand. I don't understand what the problem is.
Starring little Russell, Kurt Russell's son.
Who's Kurt Russell? Which one?
The guy. The dad.
The husband?
The dad. The baseball player.
Is he playing someone sinister?
Eventually.
Yeah.
Sorry. Spoilers.
I know.
The thing about Wyatt Russell is that his agent or him, they are aware that he has threatening vibes. Mm-hmm. And they keep putting him in movies like 22 Jump Street. Wasn't he in that? Or am I confusing it with something else?
I think so.
Yeah. Where he's like, I seem totally fine and normal for about 10 seconds. And then you're terrified of me, which is what he seems like.
Yeah, it's weird.
Apologies to Academy Award nominee Carrie Condon. That was her. You were nominated. Have a movie, and oof.
Poor thing.
Yeah.
Does she get Avengers money? She's the voice of the suit.
One of Tony's suits.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. She probably doesn't get Avengers money anyway.
And I watched Players on Netflix with Gina Rodriguez and Damon Wayans Jr. A comedy about a bunch of people old enough to know better who are who run plays to like try to pick up, to do like the pickup artist thing, and they're like, so they're running a scam on everybody that they hang out with, everybody that they want to date. It's like, okay, we're gonna do the blah 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 this con, and we're gonna do the Betsy Ross, and you know, that kind of bullshit.
Is it from like 10 years ago?
No,
it sounds like maybe, it's from like, 10 years ago.
I think like maybe three.
Oh boy,
I think it's a Netflix original, and also the guy who is Lucifer. He from the show Lucifer.
How long watched that?
I didn't watch it. But like, you know, Gina Rodriguez, Jane the Virgin, ends up liking a guy for real, and then so she does it. And then it's trite and full of tropes, but I enjoyed it. Like but I'm hating it as I'm watching it. It was a weird thing. So like, it was one of the, like, Letterboxd, I gave it a 2 stars but a heart. So it's just
Taco Bell.
Taco Bell.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not good, but I like it. Yeah. See how easy that is? Anyway.
Yep. That's it. I tried to watch Oppenheimer.
Mm.
Y'all really sat in the theater for 3 hours and watched that?
I think it's easier.
Under duress.
I think it's easier in the theater because, like, one, there's a sunk cost. Like, you paid money, you left the house.
All right.
And, like, at home, you're like, my other stuff is here.
That's actually a really good point.
That is a good point.
I think going to the theater is easier to get through than, yeah. So you did not make it very far?
No, but also it was the same day that Professor died, so maybe, I don't know.
R.I.P. Professor.
Yeah. All right, shout out. This episode goes out to my little guy, Professor Moriarty, who passed away on April 1st. That's all.
Yeah.
My dog, in case anyone was confused. So,
did she name a child Professor Moriarty?
The dog, and he was 15 years old. He led a good life.
Yes. Good long life. I only have a few, and then I'll get to Civil War, and we will pass the baton that way. The Steve Martin documentary.
Started that.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Especially that first part. It's Steve! (Parentheses) Martin. A documentary in two pieces is the full title. The first part is until he quits stand-up in 1981. Mm. And in that, there is no new footage whatsoever. There are no talking heads. There is no following around. That is entirely archival, and that is great. Mm-hmm. And it was illuminating. I would have assumed that he started out, you know, normal shtick and got weirder and weirder as he got more popular. He started weird and just waited.
Yeah.
He just waited for people to catch up.
Right. And it's great. Like probably in the first 45 minutes is what I watched. But yeah, it was just, I never really thought about his origin story. Mm-hmm. And it's just so interesting to watch how he knew specifically, like kind of how, what his trajectory to be. Mm-hmm. And just like how meticulous and scientific he was about his act.
Fascinating for anyone concerned with comedy, but also just in general. Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. Because I came up with it 6 months ago, and I'm going to use it as many as times as I can. Godzilla minus fun. It's Godzilla minus fun,
because
everybody.
Godzilla minus one came out last
movie,
year.
I was going to say, didn't you guys just watch a Godzilla movie?
We did. That was good.
And honestly, I didn't see Godzilla X Kong. This is a great example, by the way, of movie critics actually do have some relevance in our lives.
Right?
Because, like, I would have absolutely gone to see that movie if it didn't get trashed.
It's just, it is more than anything but the Lion King remake. It is so weird, soft CGI that I'm like, this no longer counts as live action. Mm-hmm. It's just entire long sequences. And like every bad kaiju movie ever made, it's like, listen, when you got the big boys to start throwing rocks at each other, I was entertained, but you kept cutting away to humans I don't care about explaining what's going on. As if they're big and they're angry and they're going to hit each other. That's all the plot we need. I don't care
Sean,
whose territory.
Sean, the earth
is hollow. Seriously.
I wouldn't bother with that. Thankfully, no one did. And a shout out to Unsinkable, Titanic Untold. This is a movie that was made in Pittsburgh, like half local cast, mostly local filmmakers. And it's very well done. You would never guess that this was kind of like a, you know, partially local project, and really a compelling look at the thing. It's not about the Titanic sinking. You see that a little bit, inevitably. It's about, like, the congressional hearings over whose fault it was after the Titanic sunk.
I didn't know that happened.
And it's...
Wait, in the U.S. Congress? Did we have skin in that game?
I didn't
realize that.
Yes, okay. We did. A lot of those people... It was on its way here. We're like, we have a few questions about where the boat went. Yeah, that's, like, slowly making its way across the country. So if you have a chance to see that, I would recommend it. And Karen Allen was in it. And I was unaware that Karen Allen was hanging out in Pittsburgh at some point in the recent past.
That would have been a situation where if I saw her in real life, I would have not known what to do. Like, I don't want to bother celebrities,
right,
but I would have been like, I might need to bother her.
Oh, and I saw award-winning actor Paul Walter Hauser wrestle very violent matches over the weekend.
Which, I had no idea that he was a wrestler.
He's into it.
I knew he was a rapper.
He's a rapper?
Mm-hmm. On one of those award wins, he accepted an award by rapping, and the rap included smack-talking some of his wrestling rivals.
He is an interesting character.
Yeah.
He's also very into Jesus. Huh. From what, like, I follow him on Instagram, and he's like very, but it's not in an obnoxious way.
But I've seen him bleed his own blood, which I can only say about one Emmy winner that I'm aware.
Is he good as a wrestler?
No, like he's
supposed to be.
No. Like he knows enough to get by, but it's more of a special attraction than like a look at this great competitor. It's like that man from the movies is hitting that other man with a stick. Wild Civil War. I will say this first. I think that Robin and I both saw it the other day. I think I walked in expecting to love it.
Really?
And went down from there. And I think Robin expected to loathe it and went slightly up. So we kind of averaged out. But
I'll say more that I disliked it for different reasons than I expected.
Okay.
Or maybe I should rather say additional reasons. So for those who don't know, Civil War is an Alex Garland movie. He did Ex Machina and Annihilation, and he did something else bad.
Men.
Oh, yeah. I was like, I know he's made at least one terrible movie.
He did a series called Devs, which I haven't seen because I don't watch TV, but that was in between. You can argue, but like the ones that people like are Ex Machina and Annihilation. Then he went away and did this series. And since he came back, oof.
Yeah, I mean, and also he's just one of those people who is like insists upon himself incarnate. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's why I was like, I'm not going to like this. And the problem with making a movie called Civil War that's set during a imaginary Civil War in the United States is that...
A now Civil War, so we should say. Not the one that happened, like a near future Civil War.
I do think it is relevant that the United States did have a Civil War that was predicated on... Can you own humans? Mm-hmm. Which, no, you cannot. Mm-hmm. And we also are in a cold Civil War right now.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie is fully uninterested in that.
Yeah.
It makes some offhand allusions to it from time to time, mm-hmm. but it has no interest in exploring American culture in any way. This is a very straightforward movie about how wartime photojournalism is weird and doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And I've seen that movie before.
Yeah.
Better.
Mm-hmm.
In every other instance that I can think of.
Yeah. I still think it works barely, but for the exact opposite reasons of what I think he wanted to do. I think it works pretty well as a kind of chilling action movie. It's just a brutal... The sound is something. We saw it in IMAX, and Mary Beth was complaining about how badly her ears hurt for 12 hours afterwards.
Mm.
Like,
it was loud.
To me, it worked as a compelling war movie made marginally more chilling by happening in identifiably American places.
It feels fucked up. Like, if you make a movie in a place that is going through a lot of turmoil and conflict politically,
yeah.
and you're like, I'm not going to worry about any of that. We're just going to, don't worry about the real world. This is an imaginary war.
Yeah.
California and Texas are friends in this one, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's dumb.
It's, if he wanted to talk about politics, it should have been more realistic. If he wanted to just talk about photojournalism in wartime, it should have been less realistic or happened in an imaginary place or whatever.
Happened in an actual war.
Right.
Right. Like,
right.
And the other reaction that I had to this, and like, I feel kind of bad about this, but like, I really felt leaving the theater, Americans aren't at the top of the world anymore. And this mm-hmm. must be what it felt like. Watching, like, being South African and watching Cry Freedom.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's like this British guy pretending that he knows what's going on here when he has no
idea.
That's
true.
That, like, that's really self-centered. And, like, I know that it's silly to whine as an American about not having the geopolitical importance and supremacy you used to have. I know that's so stupid, but I still felt it.
Yeah, the closest thing to an observation or commentary that worked, and I don't even know if this was his point, was like, it does kind of do a decent job to me of illustrating, because America is so angry all the time, because there is so much like just below the surface, rugged individualism, get off my lawn, like violent spirit, and there are so many weapons everywhere, if conflict erupts, it's going to go so badly so fast, and no one will have anything they can do about it. That was the closest thing to, I was like, yeah, that's a point. But as you said, the movie is mostly about these photojournalists and like the relationship between wartime journalism. And I thought that part was bad. Like at one point,
90% of the movie,
the plucky young one was like, I've never been more scared or felt more alive. And I'm like, you kept that line in? You were like, that's, yeah.
Also,
It's very first draft.
Yes, and I had the opposite of the Dominic Sessa problem with her. It's Kaylee Spaney, and she seems 12. And I was like, get this 12-year-old out of your van.
Again, this is what we keep talking about. We're old enough that it is people between 16 and 25 are indistinguishable.
Yes.
I'm like, you could be going to eighth grade, or you could have a career.
Yes.
I don't know. Did I watch anything else? I watched a horror movie called Rotten Tail. It's one of the worst things I've ever seen.
I would like to endorse the show Sugar on Apple Plus.
I don't know what that is.
Colin Farrell. It's very film noir. He's a detective looking for some guy's granddaughter.
Oh.
It's done very well.
Okay.
I'll just say that.
All right. We're going to talk about that later.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm supposed to be asking what you saw other than Civil War.
Oh,
I was handing it over to you.
I wanted to shout out 1001. I don't necessarily think you should watch it. It's one of those movies that I think is great, but it was so emotional and like painful. Like, it is a painful but not cathartic movie, if that makes sense.
1001.
1001. It is Teyana Taylor. I don't know who that is, but apparently she's pre-famous through other things. And it's like she pulls this kid out of, like, she kidnaps this kid from foster care. And he's like, my last memory is you abandoning me. And then it's him and him, their relationship over the next 10 years in, and this is like between the 90s and the aughts. So it's like in Harlem. And so it's like gentrification happening. There's a scene where she gets a new landlord and he shows up, this white guy, and he's like, hey, I'm your new landlord. I just wanted to make sure that like your heat's working, you got okay water pressure. And then he starts like marking like aesthetic improvements he wants to make. And I was like, you're in danger.
You in danger, girl. Yes.
And it plays out so quick. A just incredible movie. Also, it's the director, A.V. Rockwell. It's her first movie.
Really?
And it is incredibly well shot and edited. And I'm just so impressed and really excited for whatever she does next. And so I don't necessarily recommend watching it because it hurts. But it was
understood
phenomenal. It reminded me a lot of Boyhood. Like, you really feel the passage of time in that movie. But they didn't make it over 12 years. They made it like a normal movie.
Well, then, let's see what we'll be watching next. Where can we go? How do you watch Mommy Dearest and then watch There's Something About Mary? And then
Tony has his ways.
Cheech and Chong movie and then sit down and watch The French Lieutenant's Woman.
What is that? I feel like it's a Robin movie.
It is. It is so much of a Robin movie. It is Meryl Streep's third Oscar nomination and her first for Best Actress, I believe. And it is, it's like Asteroid City, where it is the making of a story and also the story.
Mm.
Yes. And I don't super remember it. I think I saw this when I first kicked off my broad Oscars quest. Mm. But I do remember thinking it was pretty good. But it is such a Robin movie. Like, I don't think y'all are going to like it. If you feel you'll want to throw out your veto.
It's free on Tubi.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I'm curious. I don't even have a veto, do I? I vetoed Valentine's Day immediately. It's Meryl Streep and Jeremy Irons. I think I won't watch it in the afternoon time when I am prone to fall asleep.
Yes.
But, you know.
I can't believe that was Anomia. Weird stuff happened back in the early 80s.
We're in the same year.
Yes, we've been circling around 1981.
Yeah, wow. Romance thriller.
Did you feel thrilled? Are there thrills to be
had? I don't remember being thrilled.
I mean, it's before 1980.
Sorry, guys. I didn't know it was going to just start playing. I was just trying to put it in my Tubi queue. Like,
I know that lion.
Do you know that one of the MGM lions is buried in my hometown?
Really?
Yeah.
How many are there?
Like 8.
Mm. Actually, I'm surprised it's not more. They don't live that long.
Yeah, they use the same one for like a decade. Yeah.
I don't understand why we just don't use the same one. shoot one and just use that footage.
It's interesting because this... we have all these shaky records before 1982, and Wikipedia literally says it was number one with a total of TBD dollars. Like, someone is convinced this bridged the gap between Paternity and Halloween 2. But this Mommy Dearest and Cheech and Chong's Nice Dreams, all from 1981, hopefully will land on Omen 3, The Final Conflict. I don't actually... hope that. I was going to do an Omen run and then see the new one, and I've done none of those things. Not only did I not run through them, I haven't even bothered to see the new one.
How many are there?
There are 4, then the reboot, now we're on the requel.
Jeez.
Requel.
Mm-hmm.
What a dark time.
It certainly is. Before we dive into that dark time and fall asleep to the soothing sounds of Jeremy Irons' voice, Cheech and Chong's Nice Dreams was released June 5th, 1981. What was... the number one song in America.
Betty Davis Eyes.
Betty Davis Eyes.
That's going to be my guess for every 1981 movie.
Because Endless Tony Love tied it together. Tony said, you've had enough Joan Crawford. Betty needs her say. It's a good song.
It's a great song.
Number one. Movie in America.
Like, for real, like an actual lizard with a tail and green, and your tongue jumps out for like bees and not bees, you know, but you know what lizards are. And humans and pigeons will be lizards if they smoke the ice cream weed.